Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadway Podcast Network presents Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went Into the Woods with me, Ben Rimmelauer. Today's guest, Kay McLelland, original Florinda and replacement Baker's wife.
Once upon a time,
Kay McLelland originated the role of Florinda in Into the Woods on Broadway and at the Old Globe, where she also created the role of Rapunzel. She went on to play the Baker's wife for the final months of the Broadway run. She also originated the dual role of Bobby and Gabby in City of Angels, introducing Cy Coleman and David Zippels with Every Breath I Take and What You Don't Know About Women. Her other Broadway credits include More to Love, The Sound of Music, The King and I, Crazy for You, and Nick and Nora, as well as the national tours of Crazy for You and Sugar Babies. She played Ruth Sherwood in the City Opera production of Wonderful Town and Petra in the Alliance Theater production of A Little Night Music. First of all, I've been a fan of yours just forever. And so it's just a treat for me personally, but I think your perspective is going to be really unique to get because you, started with the show at the Old Globe where you played your Broadway role, Florinda, as well as Rapunzel, went through all the changes with that, show and cast to go to Broadway, where you, I believe you stayed for the entire run after understudying the Baker's wife, eventually taking over as the Baker's wife and closing the show.
That's right. You didn't need me here for all that, did you?
Well, that those are the chapter headings. So
yes.
You know, I want to begin by just hearing how the show came to you. I guess it was your Broadway debut. You had done the tour of Sugar Babies before.
Yes, it was my Broadway debut. Yeah. After I think I was on the road with Sugar Babies for 4 months and then it closed on the road. So.
And I just reread it to prepare for chatting with you. But I remember years ago when the Broadway Stories book by Marty Bell came out,
mm-hmm.
which is a wonderful chapter with you talking about your Nick and Nora experience, which could be its own podcast for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But you mentioned in that that the first Broadway show you saw when you moved to New York was Sunday in the Park with George.
Yes, that's right. So, I was very sick. I had a sinus infection. My girlfriend Gina and I sat up in the way balcony in the back going, look, and just cried and cried and cried, you know.
And had you been like a Sondheim aficionado prior to that?
No, I had not been. I was, I've heard you ask other people if they were a theater geek, and I was not a theater geek at all.
Yeah,
I kind of,
you're cool.
I just kind of fell into it, which sounds so, you know, I just kind of fell into it and I was on Broadway. But I started in just being a clown. I did comedy on stage with a little group that was famous in Atlanta called the Wits End Players. And Bonnie and Terry Turner started with them, and Jan Hook started with them, and you know, SNL,
yeah,
and Third Rock and all of that. So I was just a yuck kind of girl, you know. And the first thing I was aware of with Sondheim, I did A Little Night Music at the Alliance Theater.
Oh, wonderful.
I did Petra, and you know, oh my God, it was just the thing I think I'd done before was MAME. And so of course MAME is great, but it was like, and then a Sondheim, it's like, oh, this is a whole different animal. It's a whole different world of lyric and movement and thought and I don't know, just everything. It was very exciting, but I wasn't that familiar with, you know, suddenly I was faced with these incredibly famous people. And I thought, I really need to figure out who these people are. This is Stephen Sondheim. This is James Lapine. I remember I auditioned for something at the Alliance with a monologue. I don't even remember the play that James had written. And I said, this is the waitress scene from some play by James Lapinet. And I remember guy that I was auditioning for just burst out laughing, and I thought, I've been funny already. There's something wrong. I didn't mean for that to be funny. So yeah, that was Sunday in the Park was very thrilling for me.
And were you thinking, like, I want to play Dot, I want to do this show? Was that, you know, what was your...
Oh, no. I didn't think I'd ever get there. No. I didn't have any... I don't think I thought I would ever get on Broadway. I was with, like, a clump of people who had moved from Atlanta to New York. I'd had a terrible romantic breakup, and I just thought, what the hell? I'm just going to go and see what happens. And... I don't know what I was thinking. Honestly, I had a really great agent that I got from a referral from someone who had moved from Atlanta and moved and became an agent in New York. And he kind of slid me in the door, you know, and I've just been like really, really lucky. Somehow I think what started it was my success with Sugar Babies, because that was just apparently, I mean, I didn't have any clue how big that was. I didn't know that was going to be this huge role, that I didn't know what it was like to be on the road. I didn't know what it was like to be singing with birds on my shoulders. I didn't know what Mickey Rooney and Ann Miller were going to be like. And I was terrified and sure I was going to get fired pretty much every step of the way in my career. Better show up and see what they say.
Had you grown up watching Mickey Rooney and Ann Miller, like in the old musicals and everything?
Yeah. My mom was pretty starstruck. You know, she would scurry around the house doing mom stuff. And then when Ann would come on with her Nerve Taps, you know, or Judy and Mickey would do the, you know, do their thing, she would stop and, oh, that's Mickey Rooney. Oh, that's Ann Miller. Hey, look, that's Ann Miller. And, you know, you're a little kid, you're sitting in front of the, you know how it was. It was just so glamorous and beautiful. I had no idea that I would ever even be in the same room with people like that, much less be on stage and playing with them and have them be so generous and warm and personable. It was really thrilling for me to, you know, to even consider that. So no, I didn't think, but I thought maybe I could sing in a little club someplace, or, you know, do, I don't know. I didn't ever thought about stand up, but something like a, some kind of comedy group that did improv or something like that. I really just wanted to go to New York and live there and be cool.
Well, you barely had time to do that, because you went out on the tour and then Sugar Babies closed and you went back to New York.
I did. I went back to New York.
And so then tell me when you heard about this fairy tale musical Into the Woods.
I don't remember what time of year it was, but I remember that I was in Atlanta and my agent called my mom's and dad's house and said, there's a new Sondheim show that's coming up. You're going to come back and audition for Cinderella and the Stepsisters. Mm. And so I had to make a quick turnaround, but that was all I knew. And I thought, Cinderella, yeah, maybe I'll get a call back. But I had no idea that it was going to end up that way. And I got a call back. And then, I can't remember, like a lot of people don't remember exactly what happened, but I was trying to remember if I did a workshop before San Diego. And I don't think I did.
I don't think you did.
I should have talked to you before this interview.
We're talking now. I think the Playwrights Horizons workshop in June of 86 was, I think that's where it was Nancy Opel played Florinda, I think. And then Jana Schneider, I think, was Lucinda, or vice versa, maybe. But honestly, I don't even know if they had their names. I don't think it's listed in the, I could be wrong. Anyway. I'm making unforced errors now, going off on tangents and saying the wrong information.
When other people were talking about pigs and Joy being a sexy wolf, and I was like, I know nothing about pigs. I don't think I saw pigs, little or otherwise, and there was no sex with the wolves. You know, I didn't know any of
that. No sex with wolves. But so this audition would have been then for the Old Globe production.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
And I mean, do you remember your first time meeting Stephen Sondheim in that audition process?
I do. I do. And I don't remember, you know, it's the kind of thing where you walk in and they are sitting in a darkened audience and, you know, 3, 4, 5 rows back. And that was the first time I've met Paul Ford. Of course, I knew of Paul because he was from Atlanta, but I think that Jim and Yanni, I know that Jim and Yanni was there. I don't remember, you know, this is Kay McClelland. I got introduced, you know, hi Kay. And I think that's what's all I got. I didn't get an introduction. It was just like, you could kind of sort of see some figures there. They're looming and, you know, and you could hear, once I sang my songs, they wanted me to do a scale. And I'm sure I heard, you know, Stephen's voice kind of, can't help but note that that's him, and the murmuring and but I thought, well, sorry I wasted your time, or just it was nice to be here, have a nice life, you know. And I remember my agent said, call me right after and tell me what happened, tell me, you know, who you saw there and if you've got any dirt on anything. So I called him and I said, I have no idea how I did. They made me do the scale. You know, I think I read the Baker's Wife lines. I don't know. And I saw two dark haired short girls and I don't know who they were. I think they were reading for The Witch. And my agent said later that was Patti LuPone and Ellen Foley, honey. They were two dark haired short girls. Yeah, that's who that was.
Wow.
Yeah. So
oh, in the hallway outside.
Well, I think we passed each other in the, I don't remember where we were. We were in a theater someplace and it was dark and the velvet, you know, the what do they call the things that hang down? Besides, anyway, the skirts where we were, you know, passing each other in the dark. And I remember glancing back and seeing two smallish, same size-ish dark haired girls.
Yeah.
That's all I knew.
Yeah. Well, listen, you've already given me a factoid that I have not been able to find, which is that nobody could tell me. There was the famous story of Patti LuPone's audition, but no one could tell me if that was before the first workshop, before San Diego, before Broadway. Mm-hmm. So now you've given me the timing for that. So we're already ticking things off my list. do you remember what you sang?
Probably. No, you're just really gonna be probably a cockeyed optimist.
Lovely.
And probably Here's That Rainy Day, probably. Those are my songs.
Oh, now
you know, you walk in when you've auditioned and Paul Ford's your pianist so many times, you just walk in the door and he starts the intro of your song. You know, so that's probably what I sang. That I sang that to death. And it worked for me. I got a job, so I just kept singing it.
Yeah. I guess it would have made you crazy to have to remember all the words to The Miller's Son for an audition. That was the wrong choice.
Yeah, that's hard to hold on to. I thought once I did it, I thought, oh, I can, you know, that's really cool. I'll remember that. Then I sang it some years later and thought, no, that did not stay in my head.
No, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Wow. Okay. So you got the job.
I did. I got the job. Yeah.
And
I was shocked and amazed.
I guess you all rehearsed at the West Beth Theater in the West Village.
Yes, I do remember that. And I remember the whole Rapunzel stepsister switch off. I knew that I was probably gonna not do Rapunzel after, if I did the show at all. James just not happy with my Rapunzel at all. And I think, you know how you can kind of tell if it's working for anyone in the room besides you. But I kind of felt like I was a filler, you know, for that. And I heard murmurings of, well, you know, that will be, they're not going to have you double those two small roles. They're going to make that Rapunzel's her own character, and stepsisters are of a couple, so they're separated from you know, from that plot. So
what you, I mean, it sounds like you as a actor took that as a reflection of your performance as Rapunzel, or did you think it was just simply that the audience needed to see a different face than in one role from the other?
Yeah, I think it was both. I think just personally, I didn't think I did it very well. I knew I didn't sing it the way that they wanted me to sing it. And I knew that I didn't look the part. I think they wanted somebody young and fresh and, you know, like very, you know, young looking. And I just never was that. You know, they put this blonde kind of wig on me with this kind of flat, long rope of hair, you know, that you're dragging around. And of course, you're not up in a tower, you're kind of just flailing on a chair. I just didn't feel very comfortable at all. And maybe it was because I was so new. And when I was with Lauren and Joy, you know, that was just, they were so supportive and such a buffer and so helpful. And, you know, you do this and I'll do that. And how about if we come in here? Yeah, I'll do that. You know, I didn't have to be my own person. I think it had to do with my experience as well.
Interesting. Well, listen, it's almost 40 years later, and I'm looking at you with your long blonde hair on this Zoom. I'd cast you as Rapunzel today.
The lighting worked.
See, there you go. Very sweet. But talk to me about this relationship with Joy and Lauren, especially Lauren. Other people have referred to, like Danielle Ferlin talked about sort of like kind of you two as, I don't want to say the mean girls, but like kind of like the... Like definitely like the cool girls or the posse or something, you know.
Oh wow, that's funny. That's funny. Well, you know, Lauren was more savvy in, you know, that world than I was. But she also was I don't know how to say it. She was a buoy for me. You know, she kind of guided me and like just was like a sister for me.
Yeah.
You know? And also it was interesting to watch her work. It was interesting to watch her work because she was so definitive. There was nothing flailing about her. There was nothing indecisive about what she did in my mind. She was calm and she was smug and funny and and just very open and willing to just to try anything. And we rehearsed and rehearsed because we had the knife and the toe and the heel and the hoops and the horse and the stool and the running thing and Bob, and it was just a lot, you know. So we were very tactile with each other. You know, we had to be close. You know, we wore nothing practically in that first scene that we would come on, and we were, you know, we were very intimate with each other, and in that we just were smashed together and we did not know each other at all. She was just very comforting to me. And it's funny that you said that Danielle said we came off kind of like the mean girls. I was very, as I've said five times now, young and inexperienced. I didn't really know how to deal with some of the other actors in working with them, interchanging, you know, looks or bits or whatever. And I had a couple of issues maybe with Chip. And when Chip would and I would talk, I would get my feelings hurt and I would cry. And Lauren would be like, okay, I remember specifically one time, she said, Kate, stay down there. And she stood on the landing and talked to Chip. Chip, this is what it's like to be on that, you know, whatever that thing was called, the hill or the riser, the lift or something. It's very difficult for us to be like up there with the mud coats and the hats and the dark glasses, and we don't really need notes from you. So I would, you know, she was just very, I don't know, might have come off sharp, but she was very protective of me.
I love hearing about that relationship. I'm thinking of you and Lauren, you know, other than maybe Chip and Joanna, there, it's probably for what you all went through in developing a new musical out of town and with such high pressure, it must have been very special to have someone that was really joined with you in that experience, and maybe even more so for the two of you, because I think even though Chip and Joanna seem to have been very supportive of each other, I think there was still a sense of them, you know, one of them was nominated for a Tony, one of them wasn't. There was at the level that they were within the billing, I think there was intrinsically a little more of a, you know, there was no way to escape some kind of competition. Whereas it seems like maybe you and Lauren were truly able to just support each other 100%.
Yeah, I think that for Lauren and I, that's right, because there was a time when she was first cover for, I mean, when we started in San Diego, I was first cover and Rapunzel. Then when we went from there to Broadway, they not only didn't have me do Rapunzel, they took away first cover. So Lauren was first cover. And I don't know why, but we never felt, I don't think she ever felt this way, and I never felt this way, that we were in competition. We were so grateful. I was so grateful to be there. You know, I honestly, a couple of times I thought, well, I'm just going to get fired. I'm not sure that I was really not ever solid on my feet there. Even though it was great, I was always afraid of everything. I was, you know, you watch the people come and go. You don't know what their contracts are. I wasn't so aware of mine, but I know you can be bought out of your contract. And, you know, once I was there, I thought, oh my God, I'm just not as good as all these people. I cannot keep up. I don't know what I'm doing. So we were just attached to each other from the very beginning. And Joy as well. Joy was so open and loving and willing to try anything. Mm. And all those little bits, that was her and Lauren, you know, and I felt like I was just kind of following along or just trying to keep up and do the best thing I could. So yeah, Lauren's a different animal. She's very open and supportive. She's a good sister.
Well, I'm glad you had her. So tell me about this experience for you, because coming from, you know, the national tour of Sugar Babies, you were going into a show that was already a long running hit and was, you know, very, very established and proven. And here you were in a process where I understand they were making changes throughout the run in San Diego, and there was a lot of big question marks. How did you have enough information going in to expect that, or was that surprising to you?
No, I think I knew, because I think it was going on sort of in rehearsal before San Diego. And so I knew that everything was juggling, and I knew that we all obviously always had rewrites. You know, our scripts looked like they'd, you know, been through the washing machine. They were just, so I wasn't surprised about that. And that was fun. That made it fun and kind of freeing, because you were changing things so much that you were kind of always trying new things. You were kind of always going, well, that line leads you that way, you know, now that this scene is there, you have to, you know, follow that lead. And so you can try new things and try, you know, you're not reading the set script and that's what has to happen there, you know, and that's the end of it. So that was fun. It was easy. It was light. Plus, we were in San Diego, the old globe.
Perfect weather every day.
So fabulous. Yes. It's gorgeous.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And what did you have an opinion of, oh, this show is going to be so successful and iconic? Or were you like, I don't know if they're going to make this work? Or, you know, what was your take on it?
I don't remember. I was sure that it would run. I didn't know whether I was going to be with it. And I didn't really know what the reviews were going to be like. I knew that some of those shows, some of his shows didn't always have real positive reviews, and they didn't have really long runs. Yeah. But I certainly knew that it was epic. I knew that it had, oh, I mean, Joanna and Chip were just so glowing. I couldn't see how anybody wouldn't want to just come see them, you know, and see that relationship, because it was so much fun to watch. And the fact that it wasn't all a fairy tale, all la 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 la, the fact that it dug in deeper, and it even foreshadowed in the first act, and that second act was just so rich and yummy. And I loved that it was, it dealt with such issues that are pertinent today in such a fairy tale setting. That was just wonderful to me. And I was sure that it would run. I was sure that it had a life. I didn't know how long. I didn't know that it would go from, we were 4 years, I think, from San Diego to closing.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But like, I mean, when you talk about that second act, I mean, you didn't have No One Is Alone. You didn't have Children Will Listen.
That's right.
I think maybe No More. Did you even start rehearsals with that song, or did that come sometime in the process?
I don't think we had that. I think I have a memory of George Coe and Chip doing their song.
No More.
No More, because I can hear George Coe going, running away with that kind of New York accent, running away, let's do it, you know, that kind of thing. So I have kind of forgotten what you asked me.
But so you talk about the emotional power of the second act, but it seems like the show that you started rehearsals with had a long way to go to get that. Was it just there intrinsically in a way that you were connecting to?
I felt like it was there intrinsically. And I think that's because of the actors. It was just flowing so beautifully. And Ellen Foley was so deep and rich that, you know, I felt like when the songs came in, it supported what was already there.
Yeah.
And you know, when people say it's ballad and ballad and ballad, I don't even think of it that way. It seems just the way it's supposed to go.
Mm.
The music that plays behind some of those scenes is so soft and I don't know, haunting maybe.
It doesn't
to me seem boring or really depressing, and maybe that's just my love for those actors or to watch it. It's just so poignant.
Well, I know you have a taste for sophisticated musical theater. That's another thing that you said in Marty Bell's book.
Oh God, Marty Bell's book.
You had not been a fan of the mainstream musicals, and that you liked like Bertolt Brecht, and like that was more your jam.
A little gritty.
Yeah.
Yes.
No wonder Sondheim was an easy sell for you. But with all those changes, I mean, like talking about Ellen Foley, did you have a sense, did you think something wasn't working there, whether it was her performance or the material the witch had? Did that seem to be the problem area of the show?
No, I think that it was, I didn't really... Let's see. The second act, to me, did have that. How to say that? I didn't think that was a problem. I thought that Ellen's, her interpretation was sort of what kept the show in real in the urgency of the completion of the, you know, of the wishes. You know, she, her realism really grounded it to me. You know, that she had that grittier side.
Yeah.
Not that the other witches didn't have a gritty side as well, but Ellen just has a look about her that's just more raw. And she went there, you know, and everybody, I think everybody loved that she went there. She was, you know, scary. She was really scary.
Wow.
You know, so.
Were you surprised then when she wasn't cast for the broad, for the pre-Broadway workshop?
I was surprised at that. And I kind of thought that it was because she wasn't available, because I know that they do that. I know they did that with what, Bob wasn't, Westenberg wasn't available.
Yes.
Off doing it. Yes. And had Burke come in.
Right.
Go away.
Yes. I mean, that, that was a revelation to me on the podcast. And that, did they keep making changes in the show throughout the run in San Diego, even after you opened?
Yes, I think they kept, I mean, they made changes in New York after San Diego.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember when they say, you know, Bird's Eye, the show is frozen. I don't remember that moment, but it wasn't very far before we opened. I remember being in the theater and Bernadette was learning Last Midnight, you know, and we were wondering what that was. Oh, that must be the new song, you know?
Right. Well, into previews on Broadway. But okay, so the San Diego show closes, I think it was like the first week in January in 1987. And then I know that workshop pre-Broadway with Betty Buckley and Burke Moses happened in June or July. How did you spend the entire 6 months waiting to hear whether you were cast or not? Or did you find out soon that you were going to be part of the Broadway production?
I think I waited. I think that I remember getting a letter and I may have been the only one to get this letter, but excuse me. I remember getting a letter that said, basically, we loved what you did. We love you. You're wonderful, but we're not going to use you.
Not going to use you.
Something like that. Yeah. Like, I don't remember feeling like, oh, I'm waiting to find out if I'm going to be hired again. And I think I had to come back in and sing again, but I could be wrong. I could completely be wrong about that. But then magically they said, you know, we're hiring you. We want you back. But I remember that it was a long time. What did you say it was?
6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was waiting. I think I was waiting. I was waiting tables at a place called Handwriting's on the Upper West Side.
Wow. Just going to auditions and seeing, you know, no sense. And I guess at that point you may not have even known that Into the Woods with or without you was happening on that timetable. So
I don't
think
it was
all a question mark. Yeah.
I think that was all behind me at that point. I just thought, you know, that was fun and that was great. And I was disappointed, but, you know, you just keep going.
You know? But then they said they wanted you. And so you did that workshop that summer.
Yes.
And what, you know, the workshop is the thing I'm most curious about in the entire Into the Woods universe. What do you remember about that?
Let's see. Was that when Suzanne Douglas was doing The Witch?
I think there was two, if I understand correctly, in the first week, Suzanne Douglas was The Witch. And in the second week, Betty was the witch and Suzanne was Rapunzel.
Okay. That's probably, sure, you know, you've got the timetable down. You remember it much better than I do. Or any of us, probably. You've got the whole big picture in front of you.
Well, you all are remembering what happened to you 40 years ago. I'm remembering what people told me, you know, 3 months ago.
Well, you know, I don't remember a lot about it. You know, we weren't in it as much as everyone else. I mean, you know, we were just, we'd show up every now and then. So it was hard to keep track of everything that was going on. I don't even remember. I didn't remember what happened with Burke. I remember, I didn't know the soap opera issue. I didn't know any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I knew that it was weird there because he was like suddenly he was reading the script of the prince. But was Chuck doing Rapunzel's prince in that?
No. And I don't honestly know what the story was with Chuck. My understanding was that Bob was cast as the prince and the wolf, Cinderella's prince and the wolf, and Burke was cast as Rapunzel's prince. And then Bob couldn't do the workshop, so they said Burke, who was going to cover him in Cinderella's Prince and the Wolf anyway, would actually do it for those 2 weeks, and Jeff Blumenkrantz would be Rapunzel's prince for those, which he was going to cover for those 2 weeks. And then when Burke was fired after the workshop, before Broadway rehearsal started, that's when Chuck was rehired, having done it in San Diego. So I don't know.
Okay, that sounds familiar.
I don't know if Chuck wasn't available for Broadway or the workshop, or how, you know, what their original intentions had been. And I know, according to Pam, she had been offered the workshop in Broadway, and she now thinks very stupidly, she said she could do Broadway, but not the workshop, but that they said, okay, fine. And that's when they had Suzanne do Rapunzel, which I guess she was going to be covering anyway, in the track that sort of Betsy Joslin eventually stepped into. But it was you and Lauren, and you were given the new script. I mean, do you remember thinking, okay, this is like moving in the right direction with the writing process? Or,
you know, I'm just not that smart that way. I think that Lauren, any kind of indication I had that we were getting more congealed was coming from her. I was just so happy to be there and have the lines and
amazing
get the laughs. So I don't really. I just kind of thought it was great from the beginning. And the times, the little words that they would take out and put in other little words or take a whole page out or 3 pages, I was like, wow, how do they have the foresight to know that that's, you know, that that scene needs to be to go that way for the character or for the next scene to be right? And I had no idea. I was just literally, I had my clown shoes on and my red nose, and that was...
What an amazing place to be educated. So Burke, you hadn't remembered, but do you remember much about Betty's performance or about Suzanne Douglas?
I remember Suzanne's performance. It was a little edgier than Betty's. Betty, Ms. Buckley's. you know, Betty, I'm talking like, oh, well, I know, like we had lunch. I remember Betty singing the hell out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that more than anything else. She was very different, obviously, than Ellen. And I think that was, for me, it didn't strike the bell that I wanted it to, you know. It was beautiful, but it was not what I had loved in Ellen's performance, that grit, that, you know, that this is real and you better, you know, pay attention or I'm going to turn you into a frog. Seriously. Betty's was not as threatening to me, you know, but I think she, you know, as I said, sang the crap out of it. And I don't know, everything was different once you get the nose and the wig and the real physicality of it down. And of course, we didn't have any of that.
No.
Betty was very spiritual and, you know, was very kept the company, it seemed like, together during that time, the way that she was. I kind of felt like she took the reins a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and had like, we would, before the reading would start, she had us like get in a circle and kind of concentrate and get our souls kind of connected, and then that was, you know, that was her way of building up a solid force to project in that fun, you know, that, you know, you're in a cold room with no costumes, and it's hard to keep it together, especially the scripts changing and the lines being different, and you know, you're just trying desperately to keep up. It was always impressive how everybody could always keep up.
Yeah.
You know, our stuff didn't change that much. Yeah. Everybody else's was like moving all over the place. So
all the better. That's an interesting comment about Betty, because in my imagination of her, I can only compare it to other performances of hers I have seen. I mean, I didn't see her on Broadway in Carrie, the musical, but I've listened to the bootleg clips and watched the bootleg videos, and she's so chilling and threatening. Oh. And I just think of her as an actress who's so real and mm-hmm. gritty. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
Too, you know, I'm behind her. I'm like not in the audience. I'm like behind her. So I'm not seeing her face and any of the witches' faces really. Ellen's, of course, I was right there. I was Rapunzel. Yeah. And then at the end of the show, I was Baker's wife and they brought her in.
Yes. So, oh, we'll get to that. We will get to that. But I mean, it seems like if, you know, Betty was frustrated in the role from her own accounts, and there mm-hmm. was obviously frustration with her on the creative team, and maybe that grittiness that she's so capable of wasn't something that she mm-hmm. was able to find in that material, mm-hmm. especially if it was a 2-week process that she was only there for half of. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and everyone else had been, most of you had just done the show in a full production for, you know, a couple of months. And here it was, you know, the room, the cold room with nothing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense. You know, Burke had described and other people had referenced the sense of high pressure in the room when you did the presentations of, well, first of all, there seems to be a little bit of confusion from the different accounts of, if it was 2 weeks of rehearsal, there one performance, two performances, three performances? Did they all have different endings? Were they all on the same day? Do you have any memories about the specifics of that?
Lord, you mean two performances in one day? You mean?
Yeah. Well, so I guess someone had told me that that there were three different performances after 2 weeks,
uh-huh.
and that they each had a very different ending. And then someone else said that there was only two different versions that were performed, and that it wasn't the whole show. It was like you did the show and then said, oh, but we could also try it with this last 20-minute section instead. And
wow, that's ringing a bell. But who said that? That's an amazing memory.
God, I don't even remember now. This when I write my book, I'll have to get it all straight in the quotes. But
Lord.
So neither of those.
I don't remember. I do remember Joanna dying, of course. Then I remember her not dying.
Yeah.
And then I remember an apple.
Right.
But I don't remember how we got to that. I don't remember. Well, now that you say we did like the last 20 minutes or the, from this point on, I don't, you know, we must have just done all sorts of crazy stuff because I don't remember that. I remember being confused a lot, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
And do you remember Bernadette being in the audience either in San Diego or at the workshop?
Yes, I remember her being in the audience at the workshop because you kind of can't not see people, they're right there.
Yeah.
I remember Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio was there, and I remember it being very full. You know, a lot of times when people come and see it, there's a straggling bit, a smattering of folk.
Yeah.
This was three rows of heavy hitters, you know, just smashed up against the wall. I do remember that, and I remember thinking, are we starting over? We're starting over. Why are all these people here now? What's so different that everybody has to be here now? And honestly, who are a lot of these people? I didn't know who a lot of these people were. I didn't know, I didn't know what people looked like.
Right, producers or whoever.
I've not met any of them, and they don't come right up and say, "Hi, whatever my name is." and I'm a producer. But I do remember that day being very intense. I remember those days being, you know, walking on eggshells, but just being ready for anything, like a fun house, you know, just kind of waiting for the next thing to pop out of the corner. So
was it exciting?
It was it was very exciting. It was fun and exciting and thrilling and Gary was excited and scared. you know, as I've said, I was so new to it.
Yeah.
Creating a show was just like magic. And, you know, realizing that what the people wrote in the room that I was sitting in was going to be on Broadway, and it was going to be in the history books, and it was going to be things that everybody talked about. What's coming out of your mouth on the page, coming out of my mouth. That's it. That, that line was just so impressive to me. So.
And do you, I think if my understanding of how this all worked is correct, you had your contract for Broadway before that workshop started.
Wow. Did I? I guess I did. Yes, I remember the conversation with my agent where he told me, yes, I did.
It is both two separate contracts at the same time. Mm-hmm. So at that point, were you no longer scared you were being fired? At that point, did you feel?
No, I think till the day we closed, I was nervous that somebody was going to, especially when Terry Burrell came in, when Lauren left the show and Terry Burrell came in, I thought, oh, that's it. They're going to get Lauren back and it's going to be Terry and Lauren, or they're going to find some other doll, you know, to come in. If we got heavy hitters coming in like that. You know, I was never secure. And especially when I got in to do the Baker's Wife, I was like, God, they're going to get somebody, you know, they're going to, whoever the understudy was then, Colleen, can't remember what
Colleen Fitzpatrick.
Is. Thank you, Colleen Fitzpatrick. They're going to give this to her because she can do it and I suck, you know.
What an interesting, humble take. See, I would have thought, because one of my very first interviews was Paul Ford. And he went on and on about how you were so wonderful as the Baker's Wife.
Oh, nice.
And he was so angry that they had cast this television actress as the first, Cynthia, as the replacement of Joanna.
And,
I guess, I don't think he was so angry about Mary Gordon Murray, because I guess there was a sense she was prepping for the tour when she did it or something like that.
She was just really good. She had a really good sense of it. She was very grounded, I thought, in it.
Yeah. But you were his favorite. So I would have assumed
that's so sweet.
That you, since you were the third replacement Baker's Wife, that you might have been sitting there frustrated when Joanna left and it didn't go to you, when Mary left and it didn't go to you, when Cynthia left and it didn't go to you. But not the case. You didn't.
No. I just was so happy as a right little sign, hold it up. I was so happy, you know. I didn't think I was completely out of my element, and I didn't think that. I remember that there was a reviewer that came, and he said that he had come to interview, had come to review rather Cynthia, and that she, every time he'd come, she was out. She had some vocal issues.
Yeah,
and he said, so now I've seen Kay McClellan three times, so I'm just going to review her.
Oh, wonderful.
So it got a lovely little mention in the Times, and that was nice. And I got a little bit of a, okay, maybe this isn't terrible, but you know, at toward the end of the run, I got some notes from someone, and they weren't very good notes. They were kind of like, not, you know, we're not happy with what you're doing notes. And I said to this person, if I'm not any good, why do you have me doing the role? I think from that time too, I felt like I'm just a place card, really. And the rest of the show was so wonderful. The writing was so wonderful that you had to suck really bad to ruin it. And I don't think I sucked really bad, but I was just so happy to be there and to be wearing the costumes and having the dressing room and, you know, singing those beautiful songs and trying my best to be the best Joanna Gleason I could be, you know.
Was that true even after you took over the role, that you still felt you were doing Joanna rather than your own Baker's Wife?
Well, there was a little, obviously couldn't be Joanna, but at that point, I wanted to fit in. I wanted to keep the laughs. And I wanted to fit in, and I wanted to do what other people were expecting that character to do. I didn't feel like I had the right to take, you know, to create a whole new take on the character.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, I remember saying to myself, why reinvent the wheel? I didn't have enough experience to really, you know, hone my craft on that role. I really just wanted to not make any waves and make everybody happy and be where I was supposed to be and yank the hair when I was supposed to and,
yeah,
you know, cover the lift and not fall down mostly. Yeah.
Do you later on in your career, would you have maybe felt more emboldened to veer more on your own once you had actually taken over their part?
Possibly. I can't say for sure.
I mean, I saw you on the tour of Crazy for You, which you were so wonderful in Los Angeles. And you know, you certainly didn't seem like Michelle Pach. You seemed like your own original fabulous thing.
Yeah, well, that was different too for me because all the other actors were different. You know,
oh, right.
So
yes.
Everybody's recreating it. So Chris Castle was not anything like John Hillmer. So mm-hmm. we got to play different stuff and we had a different dynamic, certainly. Now, when I went into the Broadway company of that,
yeah,
I couldn't be, at that point, I couldn't do what Michelle did because I'd already done me on the road. So I was just like, ah.
Yeah.
So, and they were very accommodating. John Hillmer was very, very kind to me and very happy to you know, shift a little and give and take a little differently. Mm. So that was fun.
Yeah.
So yes. I guess the answer to your question is yes. Later on in my career, I did feel a little bit more.
I'm glad to hear it. Although I want to know who gave you such harsh notes when you were playing the Vicar's wife. So I want to beat them up. Paul Ford wants to beat them up.
No. Paul Ford, my angel.
But I wonder if the notes were as harsh as you experienced them to be,
or
maybe they were, you know, go stage left farther and you were feeling.
I was like, wait, how many feet? Oh, you don't like my feet? Yeah, who knows? I was a baby then, so not an age, but an experience.
Yes. Well, you were young as well. I mean, so were you, was that like a dream come true when you did get the offer to assume the role?
At that point, yes, it was a dream come true because I had gone on a good bit throughout the run after Lauren left, of course. And she was just wonderful in the role as well. You know, I kind of slipped into the career that I had. Again, grateful. And once I did get it, I loved being with Chip. I loved being with Bob. I loved being with all the witches, Nancy Dussault, and of course, Ellen. And I think I got to go on with Betsy, who was wonderful.
Yeah.
As well. It was huge. And yeah, I did feel a little bit more grounded in myself once all those things happened and all those people went on. I got to go on with a few other princes and that was always fun.
You know, yeah.
How are you going to roll down the hill? I don't know. I roll down the hill this way. You know, it's just the constant adjusting and you feel like a real actor.
Broadway leading lady.
Yeah.
Was that, and how was, do you remember what month you took over the part in?
Wow. no, I don't remember the month. I just really don't. I don't even remember. We closed in September.
Yeah.
I want to say it wasn't on for very long. I really don't know. I would say May.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Was that a big disappointment then to get the news that the show was finally closing at that point?
Well, actually, one of the things in that note session that I had was the answer was, well, we're probably closing pretty soon and you know the lines. So I knew that that was imminent. They didn't want it to end. And I thought, you know, that's not a done deal, but I did know that it was, you know, once people start leaving and the replacements over and over.
Although you must have started rehearsals for City of Angels very soon after.
Right away.
Yeah.
Right away. I remember when we were sitting in the house and we were told that the show was closing, that some of us were saying, okay, what's the first line of your new job? And that was just this, you know, who this is so clever. And I think Chip Zion said, ma'am, I don't think we have that in a 7AA, you know, that was he made fun of me. He said, well, you don't, what do you care? You're going off to be with Larry Gelbarton. I thought, yes, I am. What a thing is that? Yes.
We right you away. Had already booked that. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a question for you. Were you still playing Florinda or were you the Baker's wife when the show was filmed?
I was still Baker's wife. So
still Florinda.
I was no.
You were the Baker's wife.
I was Florinda in the filming.
No, I know that.
Yeah.
Had you taken over the part at that point?
Yes, I had. Yes.
So you were.
So I went back. I went back to Florinda. Yeah, which was great because they paid you, you know, this exorbitant amount of money because of the union. Thank you. So yeah, everybody went back. And that was fun.
Yeah.
To have everybody back and sort of have the old show. And then to see how much the show had changed from the time that the people left. Then when they came back, it was like, oh, that's the way the show used to be. Not the way the show used to be, but that those were the bits then. That was the timing then, you know, because these other people come in with different, you know, timing. And
do you remember anything specific about that? I know for fans, it's so interesting to wonder the little ways that the show would have shifted and evolved over the run and different cast members coming in.
Let's see. No, the answer to that, I guess, would be no. I do remember a couple of times when I would seeing the film, the filmed version, specifically because I was doing The Baker's Wife, Joanna would do things in the recording and I would think, I don't remember her doing that. I certainly don't do that.
Yeah.
And I don't remember her doing that. And that, you know, and with she and Chip, you know, they obviously they had their own universe going on. So they could do things differently with each other. And it was perfect every, you know, no matter what they did, because they read each other so well and had that wonderful relationship. So that fits so well. So but I don't really remember huge adjustments that needed to be made, except for the camera, of course. You know, stand closer. You're either in the frame or out of the frame. So stand closer or stand farther away. Where you are is not right. So.
Did you have a sense of the significance of this being filmed at the time, that this was going to create this legacy of the original production?
Yeah, I did. I thought that was the coolest thing about the whole run, really, because you did get to go back and see it. I mean, so many things I wish I could go back and see. I wish I could have seen, you know, a recording of Sugar Babies. What a thing would that have been? You know, to see Mickey and Ant do that show. They were just crazy. That was just some crazy shit that they did. And all of those characters were so reminiscent of that old time. And, you know, even now it's even older, but I mean, that vaudeville, that just nobody knows what that is anymore. It just doesn't exist. And to have that, it would have been great. So yeah, that was wonderful. We were very excited about that whole thing. And it was fun, even when we shot the commercial, you know, that was fun too, because it's good to see it again and again, you know, so.
Have you seen other productions of the show over the years?
No, I've seen, that's not entirely true. I saw a couple of high school productions of it, but that's it. You know, I left in 99. So I didn't get to see any of the revivals.
Left New York.
I left New York in 99. Yeah. So
I mean, it's been done in Atlanta too.
Yeah, I guess it has been. I think I was aware of that. I guess it's been done pretty much everywhere, hasn't it?
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, a million different productions.
And did you see the movie?
Yes, I did see the movie. So yeah, very different.
Yeah.
Very upside down Johnny Depp. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
And upside down princes, for that matter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it was, to me, a little homogenized, if I could, well, that's probably not the thing to say, but it was, you know, to me, it wasn't as sharp.
Yeah,
to me, as a live production. Of course, that's probably just because it isn't. It's the nature of the beast.
Yeah. So. Wow. I mean, have your thoughts about what the show is or what it means changed over the years? Does it mean something different to you now than it did when you were doing it, just as a work?
You know, doing it, understanding what the messages are, and years later, having children and finding out who the difference between who you are in one world and who you are in another world, and the responsibility about your future and not just a legacy, but what you are instilling in another human being in caring for it. That's been, as a parent, just the eternal lesson, the everyday lesson. And it does go back. I mean, my kids are so sick of me and Into the Woods, because it's so popular. And it was such a popular show among young people and people. My little girl was in high school, and she has a beautiful voice. And the teacher, the chorus teacher, said, Ella, who do you know? Do you know anybody who sings? Do you know anybody who has had any kind of experience with this? And up until that point, I thought they hated me. I mean, not hated me, but they hated what I did, and they were embarrassed by me. And somebody would say, oh, your mom was this. And they would go, oh God, yes, my mom's that, whatever. But at this point, she said, yeah, well, my mom was on Broadway. Everybody shifted. Oh, that was this. This Ella's mom is this. So that little thing, and how I felt about that, and how I felt about my whole career at this point, it's all different. It's all deeper and more meaningful and richer. And more important. I wasn't important before, but the messages of that show, there's nothing else like them.
Yeah.
And set in such a strange setting, fairy tales, which, they're supposed to teach all that stuff. That's why they were invented. That's why they came up with them. But then to take it farther, it was just lovely, a lovely time. So. Mm.
Well, you're lovely. And
you are lovely.
I'm so grateful to you for giving me this time. It's so great to hear your experience.
Thank you. I feel like I'm just kind of babbling.
No, you're terrific. This is so great. Now that your kids are getting older, maybe you'll come back.
I don't know about that. You know, it's funny. I think about what I don't think I could do that. There have been a couple of times that I've needed to sing a couple of things at a wedding, I think. And when my parents were alive, I think I sang for the women's club. But I don't know who that person is anymore that got up on stage and did those things. I couldn't be that person and be a mom. I was too crazy. And they think I'm crazy as it is. So, but thank you so much for having me. And I'm sorry it took me so long to come, back to you.
It was worth the wait. I'm so
You're
happy.
Very kind.
So happy to talk to you. And we will talk again.
I hope so. And good luck on your book. You're just
you so much.
A font of information so yourself.
I'm sure I'll be following up with more questions when that's happening. It's so not good. Before. Thank you for listening to Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went Into the Woods on the Broadway Podcast Network. Look out for episode 47 with David Warren, assistant to the director at the Old Globe and on tour.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever.
See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.